compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. I certainly appreciate it, and I'm very happy when you tell your friends about the program. Thank you for that. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We'll get you on the air. My thanks to Jim Burnham, who filled in for me yesterday. I was traveling, so it was nice for him to take over the microphone. But I'm back in action, and I'm live, and you can call me and get on the air with your question. The number is 888-914-9149. Also, a big shout-out to all the people on Twitter who are wishing me a happy Taco Tuesday. Thank you for that, and happy Taco Tuesday to you. 888-914-9149 is the number. We'll go back to the phones and talk this time to Ann in Colorado. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. I just have a question regarding NFP as it relates to having or not having children, I guess, in marriage. Okay. My friends and I were talking the other day, and by the grace of God, she and I are actually both pregnant, but we were talking about whether or not it would be considered a sin to get married and practice NFP, also not, or I guess in order to avoid having children, like throughout your marriage, like with the intent that you would never have children.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're not asking for yourself, obviously, because you're expecting a baby, right?
Right. Yes, yeah. That so is correct. It was just a question that came up.
Yeah. Well, I think the answer to that is no. In fact, a pretty emphatic no. What the church says, and this, of course, is in concert with God's commandment to be fruitful and multiply, the church points out that the marriage act is ordered toward procreation, but not just procreation. So it's also ordered toward the intimacy and friendship and even the pleasure involved in the act between the spouses. That's all licit. It's all a lawful part of the marriage act, and God ordained it to be that way. But what the church says is that because the two aspects of the marriage act involve, on the one hand, the possibility of procreation, and on the other hand, the deepening of the friendship between the husband and the wife, that both elements or both dimensions of the marriage act must be present. If you take one without the other, then it's a distortion. And even it's actually a kind of a lie to make use of your body in that way without the responsibility that might come from a child if a child were to be conceived. Now, in the case of natural family planning, it's not exactly the same thing because you're not making use of a good thing, the marriage act, in a way that's illicit. You're not making use of it at all. So it would be analogous, let's say, to fasting. And if you were to fast, that's a good thing. And there are times when fasting is even necessary or medically helpful. But you can't fast indefinitely because you'll die. So although you're not going to die if the couple is practicing NFP indefinitely, nonetheless, it's a way of saying no to God's possible gift of life by avoiding making use of the marriage act. So it's different from contraception. It's not the same thing as contraception, but I would argue, and I believe the church does say, that it would entail a contraceptive mentality. So if the couple has gone into marriage saying, we're not going to have any children, and we are not open to the possibility of life for our marriage, and we will engage in the marriage act except during that time of the cycle, and we will refrain from doing so at that time, they're not misusing this gift within marriage. They're refraining from using it, but their reason for refraining from using it is contraceptive in its mentality. So the church's reminder to married couples is to simply be open to God's plan for your marriage, which may involve children, and usually does, all other things being equal. And if the couple is open to this, then that would mean not that they can't use natural family planning for a just cause, but if there is no just cause and the only real reason is they just don't want any children, then they're going into marriage with the wrong attitude. In fact, I would argue that's probably an impediment to a valid marriage. If they have no intention ever of having children, that itself, I think, would render the marriage null from the get-go. But even aside from that, that's a canonical issue. Even aside from that, it completely defeats the purpose of getting married in the first place. You know, that in this case, if they were to choose, let me give you one other example. If, let's say, the husband and the wife chose to live a virginal marriage where they agreed ahead of time that they would not live as man and wife in a conjugal relationship. They would live together. They'd be married, and they would indeed be married. It would be a valid marriage. It would be ratified but not consummated in their case, but it would still be a valid marriage. And they could live that way and not intend to have any children at all indefinitely. That would be okay. There are married couples, I believe, that the parents of St. Thérèse of Lisieux, they started their marriage that way. And eventually, I don't remember the specifics, but eventually they were persuaded to be open to having children, and then so they did. And of course, St. Thérèse was the result of that. But they originally, as I understand it, planned to live a, sometimes it's called a Josephite marriage, referring to St. Joseph. So in a scenario like that, that would be fine. But this isn't that. In this case, you've got the married couple, they are enjoying this benefit of marriage and the pleasure that comes from it, except in those times when it could give rise to conception, in which case they avoid it. I would say that that attitude is contraceptive and therefore wrong. Kind of a lot of explanation, but it's a somewhat nuanced topic that deserves a little extra explanation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that absolutely does. We were all in marriage prep together and NFP together and explored all of that, you know, in terms of, is it a loving, is it open to life, those kinds of questions around specific physical intimacy. So, so, you know, yeah, not being open to life, we thought that was kind of a red flag of, you know, but at the same time, you're practicing NFP, so there's always the chance that you could conceive. But I appreciate all of your explanations and insights, and yeah, that's
happy great. To help. And maybe one way, if you ever have to share it with other people or explain it to them, using the analogy of food again, we know that eating food is very pleasurable. I mean, it's far less pleasurable than the marriage act, obviously, but it's still pleasurable, and we enjoy eating. But we don't eat primarily for the pleasure. We eat primarily for self-preservation so that we don't die. So the analogy, it's not a perfect analogy, but I think it's helpful, would be to say, imagine if somebody had figured out a way to eat delicious food as much as she wanted and then not have to worry about calories or weight gain or any of those things, because in the analogy that comes to my mind always is to vomit it back up again, which would be a serious eating disorder. Now, it's not exactly the same thing, but I think it's very similar in the sense that it defeats the purpose and the spirit of it. If you're eating food and you've figured out a way that you don't have to deal with the calories, well, there's a problem there. And something similar, it seems to me, is at play here with that NFP only contraceptive mentality. I hope that's helpful, and I'm glad to hear that that's not your situation. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Sue in Modesto, California. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning, Patrick. You know, I've been away from the church for like 30 years, but I was raised Catholic and went to Catholic school and all that. And so there's more, and so I go to this rosary in the morning, at 7 in the morning, and there's more to the rosary than, and I don't know what it is, and I don't know how to find out.
I don't understand the question. You don't know where what is?
At the end of the rosary, they say some more words, and I don't know how to find out what those words are.
Okay, so are you talking about like the Hail Holy Queen, Mother of Mercy, that's pretty common to say after Mass, or Remember, O Most Gracious Virgin Mary. Are you thinking about that one?
Well, it's like during the rosary, it's like they do the five Hail Marys, you know, and then the Glory Be and all that. And
I think you might be thinking of the Fatima prayer. Oh, my Jesus, forgive us our sins, save us from the fires of hell. Is that the prayer you're thinking of?
I think it's like Good Our Lady of Fatima.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Church. That is the church that I go to, Our Lady of Fatima.
Perfect. Well, what I'm referring to is the event in 1917 when Our Lady appeared in Fatima, and she gave the children, was it her or the angel? I forget which. I think it was Our Lady. But she gave them the prayer to pray at the end of each decade of the rosary, and that is, Oh my Jesus, forgive us our sins, save us from the fires of hell, lead all souls to heaven, especially those most in need of thy mercy. Is that the prayer you're thinking of?
Sure, I think that is.
Okay. Well, so here's how you can find it. Yeah, here's how you can find it. Just go to, if you don't already have it, download the Relevant Radio app. You can go to your app store and download it. And then on the upper right, you're going to see a link for, let me open it here. You're going to see where it says pray. You open that up. You're going to go down to, let's see, basic prayers. And you will go, no, not basic prayers. Let's see, where do you want to go? The point I'm getting to is that there's the rosary there. So you'll be able to, you'll be able to read that prayer there. And you're also going to be able to memorize it. And that would be a good thing to do is memorize it. So all of that and many, many other prayers are part of the Relevant Radio app. And it's all free. So just go to your app store and then you can download it and you're off and running.
Okay, well, right now I don't have an app store, but eventually I'm going to get that. I don't have a computer, you know, so
Yeah, so what I would recommend is just go to relevantradio.com, and you'll find the same thing there. You'll find the prayers, everything there. It's easier on the app. Not necessarily easier, but it's certainly easy to get that on the app. But that's what I would recommend, and it's all right there. Thank you. 888-914-9149 is the number to dial. Let's go now to Veronica, who's listening in Los Angeles. Good morning, Veronica.
Buenos dias, Patrick.
Buenos dias, señorita.
I have a question on regards to the change that Pope Francis did to the Lord's Prayer just recently. The change that he did, it's regards to the part where we say, lead us not into temptation.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're supposed to say, do not abandon us to temptation. So my questions are, first, what does the new translation imply? And if that translation is correct, and if we are supposed to start praying it that way?
Well, this is relatively new, and I haven't had a chance to really look at it closely, but I'm not aware, I could be wrong, but I'm not aware that this was something that Pope Francis mandated that everybody everywhere has to do. In the past, in fact, if you go to the show YouTube channel, you can find one, if you look, you know, when you go to the YouTube channel, look up Patrick Madrid Show, and then look up as you go through the videos, you'll find one where I discuss from a couple of years ago when he was talking about this issue. And I saw this pop up in a headline within the last few days. I haven't had a chance to really look at it closely. So my impression is that this is not him saying you must do this. It could be him saying I think this is better and so forth. What you'll find in the commentary that I gave earlier is that this is not, it's not the words of Jesus in the Bible. So the prayer that Jesus gave us in the Bible does not say abandon us to temptation. And I understand the arguments that are raised about, well, how would God lead you into temptation? And in that I cover the fact that, well, the Holy Spirit definitely led Jesus into the wilderness where he fasted for 40 days. He led him there, we're told in Scripture, to be tempted. So even that argument, I don't think really holds up under biblical scrutiny. But unless and until I see something saying that this is how it must be said, I don't think it's anything more than just Pope Francis expressing his opinion on this issue. So maybe there's more to it, I just haven't seen that at this point. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, but why would a pope make a suggestion to change a prayer that has been, you know, been prayed forever in a way, and now he is making this type of suggestions and not making it like an official change for the whole church? What is the point of making that change?
I don't know. And I can't speak for Pope Francis. He obviously has to explain what he means if he chooses to do so. What he says and does, that's his responsibility. And all I can do is just refer you to him. I don't know how to. I don't know how to explain it beyond that. I personally don't know why that would need to be done. I subscribe to the old rule: if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if this is the prayer as given to us by Jesus Christ, it seems pretty good to me. So I'm not really sure what to tell you. Pope Francis has a history of not following up with clarification. I don't know why, but often he doesn't. So maybe the best thing we can do at this point is to pray for him, as we always should anyway, and ask the Lord to encourage him to offer an explanation so that people are not confused and that people are not left wondering, as you obviously are. I mean, Pope Francis asks us to pray for him all the time, and I think we should take him up on that because we want him to be the very best pope possible. We want that for any pope. So we should pray for him and ask God to give him all the things that he needs to be the very best pope possible. That's my hope. That's my prayer. So that's how I would handle it.
All right. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Thank you. Looking at the clock here, we've got some more time. Do we have to take our next break? So why don't we go now to
Different. Make my day.
Is that a no, Cyrus? Is that your way of saying don't go to another call?
No, that's a yes. Make my day. Let's get these calls.
You're enigmatic and inscrutable sometimes, so I'm just trying to make sure
Not the first time I've heard that.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Enigmatic and Unscrutable. Let's go to another Veronica, this time in Los Angeles. Hi, Veronica.
Hi, Patrick. I have a question. I had my second child about a year and a half ago, and since then I've kind of been struggling. I've had two miscarriages since then. And my husband always makes comments about he's just going to get a vasectomy so that I don't have to go through any more of this physical stuff. So my question, I'm against it. I'm learning my faith. I'm trying to do the natural family planning. I'm against not doing contraceptive, anything like that. I'm open to life. My question is, would I be engaging in the sin if he goes and gets a vasectomy without me knowing and then I still participate in the marital act with him?
No, all other things being equal. So you've already told him, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want you to do this. This is wrong. And he's got a mind of his own. He's going to do it anyway. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. No, you would not be committing a sin if you, after the fact, engage in the marital act. Now, he would be, every single time, he would be committing a serious sin. But you're not party to that because you're not, you did not sign off on his decision to do that. In fact, you pleaded with him not to do that. So, no, the church would not say that you are committing a sin. But it's good that you're trying to get his attention and tell him doing this is wrong. Now, you would be within your rights to say, well, check it out. I mean, if you go through with this, that changes my whole approach to, my whole attitude about this act. And you're going to greatly... what's the word I want here? You're going to greatly worsen the situation when it comes to the possibility of our enjoying this. So do you really want to do that? Do you really want to go through with something that I'm your wife and telling you no? And furthermore, you may wreck the possibility of this being a wonderful thing in the future. Do you really want to go through with that? And how are you going to feel knowing that your wife is reluctant and unhappy and even angry and maybe resentful and holding it against you and every time this is a real cross and a burden for her? Do you really want a marriage where every time the two of you engage in this act that your wife is going to be feeling that way? I can't imagine any man, any married man, who's sane, who would want his wife with all those negative feelings and emotions going into it. He would be crazy, if you ask me. So that would be another thing that you could bring up, and just point out to him, you will be wrecking something beautiful that is important to our marriage, and you know, you're going to have to deal with the after effects. Is that really something you want? Maybe he'll think about it. Maybe he'll realize, well, you know, I really don't want that. And he'd be smart to say that. He'd be foolish to think otherwise, I think. What do you think?
I agree. My question is, how do I explain to him, because in his mindset, he's doing me the favor by not getting me pregnant, since I miscarried twice back, you know, within 6 months of each other.
And say, honey, really difficult. Say, honey, here's how to do me a favor. First of all, don't plunge headlong into mortal sin. My job as your wife is to help you get to heaven. And if you do this, you're going to make it very difficult for me to help you get to heaven, number one. And number two, we'll just practice NFP. We'll master the technique and we will avoid this during the fertile period and all will be well. Do that favor and we don't have a problem. That's what I'd tell him. Thank you. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
All righty. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. This is hour three, which means, of course, that in about half an hour, it will be over. So if you've been thinking of calling in, do that now. Call me at 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, you mentioned a minute ago who our next caller is. I forgot.
Oh, Charlotte in New Jersey.
There we go. Thank you. Charlotte in New Jersey, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Patrick. My question is this. I'm 84 years old, and I've been back going to church physically for quite a while now. I do go to Mass every Sunday and more.
Wonderful.
However, on one or two Sundays, when I get up, I'm tired sometimes, and I thought, if I don't go to Mass, it's a sin, even if I watched it on TV. So I'm not sure if I didn't go to Mass because I just didn't want to or I didn't feel up to it. Would that be a sin if I watched it on TV?
No. So let's parse this out a little bit. First of all, whether you watch it on TV or not in itself doesn't affect if it's a sin. In your diocese, now where are you? What town are you in again? Charlotte?
I'm in Freehold.
You're in New Jersey, right?
Yes.
Okay. So has your diocese reinstituted the Sunday obligation? I'm guessing they haven't.
No, they haven't.
Okay, so right there's your answer. If you didn't go to Mass on Sunday because there's no obligation, you're not committing a sin. I think one could argue that if you can go to Mass on Sunday, even if the obligation is not in place, and yet you don't, for a reason that's not sufficient, in other words, you're not sick, you're not in some other way incapacitated or detained, but you just don't feel like going, I would say that's, although maybe it's not a sin, it's certainly a revelation of one's actual commitment to the Lord. But in your situation, because there is no Sunday obligation where you live, then no, you're not committing a sin. Now let's extend this. Let's say that next month your bishop reinstitutes the Sunday obligation. You're 84 years old. And if you get up that morning and you're just feeling weak, you're not feeling well, you don't think you can really get up and go, well, you have a sufficient reason to stay home for Mass. The church does not expect the impossible. God does not expect the impossible. So if it's not really possible for you to get up and go to Mass because of your health, even if you're not sick, if you're just feeling poorly and you're just, you know, whatever it may be, you're weak or out of breath, whatever it may be, you're not committing a sin if you say, Lord, I'd like to go, but as I feel right now, I just don't think I'm up to it, and you stay home. That's not a sin. But now let's take a different scenario. Let's say that the Sunday obligation is in place, and you're not sick, and you're not feeling under the weather or any of those things, but you just don't really want to go, and you decide to stay home. Well, in that case, yeah, you would be committing a serious sin. because you have the ability to go, and there's no compelling reason that you can't go. You just don't want to go. So in that case, yeah, that would be a sin. But that doesn't sound like the situation that you're in, is it?
No, it's just that once I committed myself to going back to Mass, you feel guilty if you don't. And one Sunday I woke up and I was really tired, and I said, no, I have to go to Mass, and I did. And I was wondering, had I not, would it have been a sin? That was my big issue.
Yeah, I get you. Well, ultimately, only you can answer that question, but it seems to me that if you're tired, that's pretty common to most people. You get up in the morning and you feel kind of tired. And for most people, under most circumstances, I don't think that would be a sufficient reason to not go to Mass. Oh, I'm tired this morning. Well, we all wake up tired. But you're 84 years old. So if in your situation, feeling tired was debilitating, and maybe it could put you, you know, in a situation where you might get sick or something, only you can know those details. And if those details are present, then I would say, no, if you stayed home, that's not committing a sin. But I mean, if it's just a matter of, you know, I'm sleepy, I'd like to sleep in more, we all go through that. And in that case, if it was just that alone, I would say, yeah, I mean, if you stayed home from Mass when you could have gone, yeah, I would say that would not be a good excuse.
So now, while the ban is still in effect as far as church,
the ban,
if I did it, well, I meant, you know, before they actually open the churches again fully.
Okay.
I chose to go back months ago,
yeah.
But during this time, if I choose not to go to Mass on a Sunday, it would not be. Is that correct?
As long as the Sunday obligation is not present, is not been reinstated, then no, you're not committing a sin.
Okay. That's been an issue with me.
Right. Are the churches open in New Jersey?
Not officially. We have, our church has been having Mass during the week. We have one Mass, and on Sundays we have our regular schedule, and we do have confessions.
That's good. Well, this is another example of, I just don't understand why there are some holdouts, some pockets in the United States where they just don't open the churches up, because throughout the rest of the country, Ohio, for an example, I can use that as an example because that's where I live. In Ohio, the churches have been open since April or March of last year. I know it wouldn't be March, let's say April or May at the very latest. The churches opened back up again. Now, they had some COVID restrictions. You know, every other pew is roped off for social distancing. And, you know, they ask people to wear masks. But you get a couple hundred people in church, and everything's fine. And for most of the rest of the United States, everything's been fine. And there's no problem with people being indoors at Mass, even singing and such. And everything's fine. So it puzzles me that there are still these odd pockets where the extreme and maybe I would say kind of exaggerated precautions are still being taken, when I think it's been shown definitively that those are no longer necessary. But I don't make those decisions, so all I can do is scratch my head and wonder, you know, when things will get back on an even keel again. That's my hope. Thanks for the call. Let's go now to, who am I going to, Cyrus? Jennifer in Nashville. Good morning, Jennifer.
Hi, Patrick. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
My question is, a week ago or so, my daughter was asking why we have to go to a priest for confession. Why can't we just say, you know, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. in our own private prayers? And I referred to the gospel reading, actually, that I think was read on Sunday, about Jesus saying to the apostles, you know, whose sins you forgive are forgiven, and those
right.
you retain are retained. So my question is, I did tell her that, but then, you know, she kind of looked at me and she accepted it because that's what I told her. But I felt like I needed to kind of fill in, like, okay, so he said this, and then back then they started to do this, and now they do this. How did we get from what Jesus said back then to now, to where we're walking into a confessional, to where we say, forgive me, Father, for I've sinned, and it's been, you know, 3 months since my last mm-hmm. confession. How did that evolve?
Mm-hmm. In the same way that in the Garden of Eden, Eve did not wear a wedding dress. There was no ring. They did not exchange vows. Adam was not in a tuxedo. Nobody threw rice. Of course, you can't do that anymore. Nobody threw confetti. There was no wedding cake. There was no limo. There were no photographs. There was no, reception dinner and all of those things. The way we celebrate weddings today is a series of customs that have been built up over time because they're good. You know, the white is significant of the virginity of the wife. The ring, the sign of their commitment to each other, and all the different things that go into it. These are all part of the human developments about something that God himself established in the Garden of Eden. So I'm not being glib with you. I'm not being flippant with you when I say it's for the same reason. It is for the same reason. So when Jesus said to the apostles in John chapter 20, he who sins you forgive are forgiven, and he who sins you hold bound are held bound, after breathing on them and giving them the authority to do this, he didn't tell them, okay, now here's exactly how I want you to do this. He left it to them, the bishops of the church, to determine how best to go about this. And that developed over time. At the Last Supper, Jesus didn't tell them exactly all the specific minute details about how Mass would be celebrated. He instituted the Mass at the Last Supper, and he told them, do this. And then over time, the way they did it and some of the specific things that were associated with it, those developed as part of the liturgical tradition of the church. So this is a very common thing in the life of the church. So don't be bothered, I guess I'd say, that when you go to confession that there's a certain ritual where you say certain things. Jesus did not prescribe that to the apostles, but he didn't need to. You know, he told the church, you know, whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven, whatever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. He said this to the first bishops in Matthew 18. So it's an organic development that's good. And it brings us to the present day where we celebrate the sacrament in the Western church. That's not exactly how they do it in the Eastern churches. For what it's worth, I'll just mention, if you were to go to a Byzantine Catholic church, for example, you would go to confession with the priest standing next to you, standing in front of the icon of Christ in the iconostasis that separates the where the congregation sits and where the sanctuary is, where the altar is. There's a wall that's adorned with icons, and so the priest would stand next to you, in front of the icon of Jesus, and he would have his stole on the side that he's standing next to you on over your shoulder. So he'd put his stole over your shoulder, put his hand on your shoulder, and the two of you together facing Jesus, he would hear your confession that way. So it's done differently in the East than it is done in the West, even though it's the same sacrament. And it's all the result of this natural, organic progression, this natural, organic development. I'll give you one final thought, because I don't want to over-explain this, but this might be helpful. Remember what Jesus said in the Gospels. He said that the kingdom of heaven, the church, is like a mustard seed. And he talks about how it grows and becomes very big, to the point where it's almost as big as a tree practically, and birds are nesting in its branches and such. So it's the same exact thing. If you come back 5 years later and you see this huge, almost tree-like plant, it is the same entity as that little mustard seed that he would have held in the palm of his hand, but naturally it's grown and developed. So it looks different in its mature form than it did in its infancy. So when you read the Gospels, when you read the book of Acts, you are seeing the church in her infancy. And it's to be expected that those external characteristics that develop over time, just like you look different now than you did when you were a year old, in the same way with the mustard seed, the church and her customs and things like that in terms of external appearances are going to look different from the way they did in her infancy. But it's the same church and it's the same set of teachings that have developed this way. I hope that's helpful to you. Let's see. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Rick. Thank you. By the way, thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate your phone call. Let's go now to Rick in Los Angeles. Good morning, Rick.
Hey, Patrick. Good morning. How are you, sir?
I am well, thank you.
Great, great. So I was calling to see if you can give me some advice. So I've got a friend that I'm trying to help out. First of all, it's a young man. He's 25 years old. I'm really good friends with both of his parents, both of his parents are not practicing the Catholic faith.
Okay.
But this young man He recently went through some pretty hard times, got caught up with drugs. And so, anyway, so within that process of him coming out, you know, through recovery, he found that, he found a Protestant church. So he's never practiced any religion. He's never practiced any faith, actually. So he's kind of got what we call, I guess what you would call a high in his religion right now at the moment. So he's struggling really though to find the right faith. I mean, so he's approached me and said, "Hey, Rick, you know, I'm trying to find out, you know, if this church is right for me." He pretty much reaching out to see if I can take him to Mass. So I took him to Mass this last Sunday. He really enjoyed it, but he's really lost. I mean, and I can tell just again by, you know, he's looking for answers. He's trying to find his way. So by doing that, he replied, he sent me a text message yesterday asking, you know, thanking me for taking him to Mass. Mm-hmm. And he started asking me, could you please come with me? It would really mean a lot to me if you came to my church. I replied back to him and I told him, look, you know, I'm a Catholic. I follow my faith, you know, and I strongly believe in the Catholic, faith. So, I was trying to be careful what words to use, and I thanked them for inviting me. But is there anything else you think I could recommend? I can tell him. I think that my response to him might come off, I don't know if it came off harsh to him, but I just want to make sure that I could express to him concerns why I don't want to go and visit his church. I mean, so any recommendations?
Yeah, I think that your approach is correct. In other words, that you don't need to go to his church, and you could explain that to him. And I would. I would just say, you know, the reason I'm going to take a pass on that is not because I don't like you or because I disrespect you, quite the opposite, but it's because the Catholic Church is the one true church. And so for mm-hmm. me to go to a different church would be, you know, contrary to what I believe about the Catholic Church. And that, by the way, is why I'm inviting you to come to the Catholic Church, because it is the one true church where you'll receive the sacraments and such. So I would just put it that way. And that way you don't have to beat around the bush or pretend or just say, you know, I'm sure your church has many sincere people. Thank God for that. But Jesus is calling you to the fullness of Christianity. He has so much more for you. And that would be in the Catholic Church, with all of its faults and all the failings of its members and such. So I would approach it that way. And I've done that many times in conversation with people. And I think they'll respect that. You know, in the end, he may not wind up agreeing with you, but then again, he very well may. Because you're living what you really believe, and you're not going to compromise. Now, there's one other detail, and that is what you asked, what would you recommend? Well, I wrote a book for people just like that, people just like him who are not sure and they're searching and they're wondering. The book is called Why Be Catholic? 10 Answers to a Very Important Question. And so that might be something to take a look at. It's a way to reach out to him and share with him a view of the church that he may never have thought of before. So that would be one place. Maybe play for him Dr. Scott Hahn's Conversion of a Protestant Minister video. It's available on YouTube, and that's powerful, very powerful. There's another resource. And have him listen to the Patrick Madrid Show, too. I think if he does that, then it'll just be a matter of time. I'll be right back.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
This is the last segment of the show, and this is still time for you to give a call, 888-914-9149. Let's go now to, and Cyrus, I did it again. You told me who I'm going to go to. Rosa in where? Rosa in Florida, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Patrick. How are you today?
I am well, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Well, sure. I'm calling you about this. On Palm Sunday, I went to church. I got there pretty early, and I got seated right in center in church, and then after, you know, being a long mass, after a while I wasn't feeling well, so I sat down, and eventually within minutes I passed out.
They had to call an ambulance on me and everything. The mass continued. They laid me down in the bench. All this commotion happening while the mass was still going. I was taken out to the hospital in ambulance, and now I'm embarrassed to go back to church. I am so embarrassed. As I was coming back, I kept apologizing, and I know it's natural, whatever, but I don't know how to go back. I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah, I can understand why.
If you don't feel well, don't come to church. But I was feeling fine, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why I feel embarrassed.
Understandable. You're human, so you would feel embarrassed, and I can understand why. I think I would too. But it's like the old saying, if you fall off, get back on again. And I think that applies here. There's no need to be embarrassed any more than what you're already feeling. And, you know, God wants you there. The community wants you there. And it wasn't your fault. It wasn't like you did something dumb. You couldn't help it. Maybe you didn't have enough food in you, or maybe something else happened. You got lightheaded and you fell down. It's not your fault. And everyone knows that. No one's judging you for that, least of all God. So my thought is that if you just force yourself to go back, you'll find out this is actually fine. This is comfortable. And nobody's making fun of me. Nobody's looking at me and whispering and pointing or anything like that, because they know it wasn't my fault. So I think if you get back on, you'll be fine. You might have to push yourself to go, but once you go, you'll be fine. And that feeling of embarrassment, I think, will fade away very quickly.
You know, one thing that works for me is when I make a fool out of myself, and I do this so often, I've gotten quite good at it. I just, the next time you see the same group of people, just make a joke about it and say, oh, hopefully I don't pass out today. You know, just break the ice, and then it's off it's off the table, and you don't have to worry about it anymore.
That's a good way to do it.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you. That's a great idea. Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sure everybody they'll chuckle, and then it'll be over and you'll be off and running. Yeah. Thank you. You know, Cyrus, I've seen people faint. I mean, I guess we all have it one time or another, like heat stroke or something, and they just keel over. It's very real, and it's not something that people plan, obviously. It can happen to anybody.
Yeah, it absolutely. So it's really nothing to be embarrassed about at all. But I totally understand the feeling she must have going back in. It's like, last time I caused a little bit of a ruckus.
I'm back.
But I'm back. Let's do it again.
Well, I have a serious question for you, Cyrus.
Okay.
Have you ever just passed out during the show?
No.
At the controls?
No, I've never passed out.
Your face down in the controls?
Fallen asleep, maybe.
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 But that's not common.
No, absolutely not. I've never passed out during the show. But it's a sit-down show.
Not even once?
Maybe if I was standing up, maybe. You know, I've seen people pass out at a wedding.
Yeah.
You know, where they're doing their vows.
Doing the vows,
and they just fall over.
I've seen that too. I think it must be nerves.
Yeah, and just...
Or maybe not eating.
Not breathing correctly. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's why you always have a taco before the show starts, right?
Especially on Tuesdays.
To keep your strength up.
That's right.
I love how you say especially. It always brings a smile to my face when you say that. What's your first
name? I am here to bring a smile to your face.
Well, you succeed every day.
All right, let's
you're a champion. You want the spotlight off you?
I want to go to calls.
You want to get out of the burning spotlight?
Ash in California.
Right. Okay, Ash in California. Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hey, hi, Patrick. Yeah, I had a question. My question is this. I work for a major drug pharmaceutical company as a manager, and I've been there for a long time. So we sell the Plan B, the national one and the generic one. And
you're talking about, pause. I want to make sure I understand you. You're talking about, when you say Plan B, you're talking about the quote-unquote backup contraception for the sake of not the woman not getting pregnant. Is that right?
Yeah, it's called the day after pill or whatever. And so it was sold inside the pharmacy. Now it's outside the pharmacy. Then we found out that people are stealing it. So now it's behind the counter. My question is this. I don't want to sell it, but I feel it's not right to sell it. But when there's nobody around, if somebody comes and says, I need to get it, if I say it, I'm going to get somebody else to help you. Am I not passing that sin to somebody else?
Yeah, you are. Because, I mean, first of all, it's a sin in itself for somebody to use that and to participate at that close level, that proximate level, as they say, by selling it. Yeah, that does involve you in that. So the next step from that would be to say to somebody else, well, you give it to her. That would still be, as you say, kind of involving that other person in a sin. So this is one of those difficult scenarios where you work in an industry that, as you can see, sometimes it's going to require you to compromise your moral beliefs. So my suggestion would be, if you can find a different job, I know that may seem extreme, but it's not really extreme. What did Jesus say? He said, if your hand causes you to sin or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off, or it's better to enter into eternal life without your hand or your foot than to be thrown into hell with both your hand and your feet. Or if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out, for it's better to go into eternal life missing an eye than to be thrown into hell with both your eyes. Now, obviously, Jesus did not mean that in a literal sense, but I think the message there applies in this case, and that is, you know, even when it comes to our own livelihood, if our livelihood requires us to compromise our moral convictions on such a serious issue, then the obligation would be on us to look for something else. So, I mean, it ties in, just to use a kind of roundabout example, we've heard of all the stories of the guards at death camps during World War II who said, well, I was just doing my job. I was just following orders. And we recognize that that's not a sufficient excuse. You know, that was your job, okay. And I guess maybe you didn't have a lot of options, but did you do anything to try to avoid participating in the death camps? Now, if it can be shown that somebody did try really hard, that's a different story. So, like, take the father of Pope Benedict XVI, who was a kid during World War II. His father was an adult. And his father basically, he shirked his, I think he went, if I'm not mistaken, I think he went AWOL from a requirement to serve in the German army. And as a boy, Pope Benedict XVI, the same thing. He was sort of conscripted into the Hitler Youth Program, but he just pulled out of it and stopped going. He refused to participate. So there are situations in where that is possible to do. I don't know about your particular situation, but if I were in your situation, I would try to avoid, even if it meant changing my job, try to avoid being put in a situation where I was being forced to do something that I knew was immoral.
Yeah, I kind of avoided, but in the same way, there's a lesser degree of the same sin, right? When people buy contraceptives, right, over the counter, and it has the same equivalency of preventing a birth. But even that is so common in this country, and it's sold by so many people, and so many people get involved in it. It happens to be a habit after a while, because you just come to the counter and they buy it and it's done. But they don't think about it. That's what regarding the plan B is a little bit more serious. And I have tried my best to avoid it as much as I can, but sometimes you can avoid it. And then by avoiding, I say, I don't sell it. I don't give it to them. But I said, let me get somebody else to help you. And then if the customer gets really mad, they call the corporate office, and then you get invited to do this thing.
Well, I'm not sure what you're asking me then. Are you asking me if it's okay for you to pass it off to the next person? I thought I answered that, but maybe I misunderstood your question.
No, it's not okay to pass it to someone. What my question was, by my passing it, I pass my sin to somebody else, which I feel guilty. That's what I meant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
no,
I'm best mm-hmm. not to do it, and I'm just to avoid and walk away from it, like that. But I have done it many times. But yep. Sometimes the situation is so tight that it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a difficult situation that you're in, especially because of that field. So my advice would be, first of all, this is your conscience speaking to you. Listen to your conscience. If it's bothering you, pay really close attention to that, because it's telling you there's something wrong with this situation. And then do everything you can to move in the right direction. And I know it's easier said than done. I mean, it's easy for me to tell somebody, well, just get a different job. That's not easy to do. And maybe you're getting paid very well at your job and you might not get paid as well at another job. So I recognize that it's easier said than done, but it can be done. And if your conscience is bothering you, that's, of course, a big red flag to pay close attention to. And then do everything you can. Ask God to help you open the right doors. And he'll bless you for it. You know, he knows that you want to do the right thing. So move in that direction. That would be my humble advice. Well, thank you. We're out of time, as it always happens. 3 hours go by very quickly. But I look forward to being again with you tomorrow. Same Pat time, same Pat channel right here on Relevant Radio. And in the meantime, if you want to send me a message, you can find me at Twitter at Patrick Madrid. I'll be on the lookout for your messages there. Also, you can send me an email by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. So between now and tomorrow, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you. Na 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 na